Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk, of course, our weekly look at all things tech-related, funnily enough, from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with the show, you can drop us an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be talking all about Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, or WWDC, event that took place last week. But don't worry, we haven't forgotten the Android users. Our resident Android expert, Steve Nutt, will also be back to talk about the latest goings-on in the world of Google. And we'll have the final part of our interview with the team behind the Right Here indoor navigation app. Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown are joining me this week. I guess the big news for us is probably going to be the Apple stuff, which we'll get into a little bit later. But Hubert, anything else caught your eye this week?
A rare thing for me, but it's a Jaws tip, which I've discovered only literally recently before the recording. It considers two things: selecting large bits of text and temporary place markers. So I don't know if either of you use temporary place markers in, for example, web pages or Word documents with Jaws much, but I find them really useful, especially because on web pages, often when I'm using like a long bit of like an article for research, I often need to kind of swap back from the article to my notes and the other way around. And often when I refocus on the web browser, Jaws focus disappears and you need to find your place again. So the temporary place markers are really good because you can keep a reference point on a web page if you need to keep going back to it for notes and such. Now that's great. What I found out is you can actually select large bits of text using the temporary place marker. So in simple ways to do it, first, if you navigate to the spot where you want your place marker to be, so it can be a start of a paragraph or a start of a specific line, and then if you press Control, Windows, and the letter K, you will set a temporary place marker, and Jaws will announce that for you. And then the next thing you need to do is get to the end of the bit of text you want to select and copy. Then press Insert and Space, and press the letter M for mic. This command will then tell Jaws to select everything from your current location to the place marker. And then you can just press Control-C to copy all of that. I did not know about this. I don't know about you two, but I did not know this about this at all. I thought it was really clever because sometimes you do need to select large bits of text. And I don't know about you. I think there's only so many times you can press Control-Shift with the arrow keys before your fingers just get tired.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew about the place markers and the temporary place markers, but I didn't realise you could actually do that with selecting text. So that's a really good one, Hubert.
I've got to be honest, and this is my thing with Jaws, or with most screen readers, to be fair. I know the things that I use, and it's funny because I've used Jaws must be nearly 15 years now, and half the features I still don't really understand, like the place markers. I'll sometimes accidentally hit a keystroke. I can't even remember what it is. But I'll sometimes accidentally hit a keystroke and hear there are no place markers on this page. But I've never really worked out what the place markers are. And to be fair, I probably could, you know, go digging through like the help documentation and finding it. But yeah, I don't know. There's so much in Jaws that just I don't understand. Like I found sometimes when I go to do Q to get to the main region, sometimes I'll press W instead and it'll say no word list has been created. And I'm like, okay, but what's a word list? And what does that mean?
There's just so many things in Jaws and I don't think anyone remembers them all. And then all of a sudden someone tells you and then you're going, I could have used that in so many cases if I knew.
Like you, Callum, I know that there are lots of things in Jaws that you could do, lots of twiddly bits, but I would never say that I'm a Jaws connoisseur. I use it and I've been using it since 1999, so it's quite a while now, but I just don't know every keystroke and I don't know every little twiddly bit that you could use to your advantage. So what I tend to do is if there's something I want to do or something somebody has suggested to try, I'll go and ask Martin because he's got this, he's really good at retaining things that he picks up. He really studies, he's quite good with all the screen readers and he tends to remember the keystrokes. And I'll just go and ask him and I'll say, oh, did you know you could do XYZ? Yeah, I could have told you that.
Another thing I quite like as an extra little bonus is the FS companion feature website where you can actually ask questions and ask an AI questions and it will bring you information based on the kind of Freedom Scientific manuals and such like that. I had that recently with my Braille display where I had a few issues after getting a new laptop. And I would ask it, say, this is the problem I've got. And it would say, okay, check these settings and change this setting and that setting. And this is how you get to it. I'm like, this is fantastic.
I think in some ways, though, I'm kind of a little bit spoiled by Lisi because with the place markers, I don't think it's exactly the same, but Lisi has a similar thing called Lisi points. So you can go somewhere on a web page or a document, set points. I think I'm right in saying you can have points 1 to 9. So there's a lot that you can have there, and then you just press a keystroke, and it will just jump you straight to that point. And they persist as well. So if I set one on a particular web page, and then I shut down my laptop, or I reboot, or I go do other things, when I go back to that website, they'll still be there. That's brilliant for these long-winded systems that we've got at work, where there's about 200 different elements on there. I mean, the HR system at work is massive, but I've just got a little point to get. So rather than having to scroll through to the, I don't know, like view payslips or book annual leave or whatever, I've just set points on them and I can just jump straight there. But then it's a little bit of a shame that that's like a third party thing because someone will ask how to do that and I'll say, oh, I do it in Lisa and I don't have Lisa. Oh, okay. I think you can do it natively. I don't know. But no, that's a good tip, is that? Jackie, anything from you this week?
Yes, I have discovered something that somebody on one of the multi-line Braille display lists that I belong to, they came up with this suggestion that they'd tried, and I thought I'm going to give this a go and see if it works. So, what they suggested was that if you have your dot pad paired with your phone or your iPad, and you go into Chat GPT and you ask it to draw the outline of just anything random. This person used an apple as an example. And the next thing, lo and behold, you have the apple drawn on your dot pad. You can actually feel it. So they were really overwhelmed with this. They thought this discovery was great, and I thought, right, I'm going to try this. So I went into Chat GPT on my phone with my dot pad paired, and I tried first of all asking Chat GPT, the voice, to draw me the outline of an apple, and it said it couldn't draw. But I thought, right, I'm going to try this with the text field, an edit field where you type in, draw an outline of an apple. Sure enough, up it came, the apple on the dot pad. First of all, you can read all the braille surrounding the, what you've asked, and then it says, creating your image. And that's what you read on the dot pad, and then the apple comes up. So then I asked it to draw the apple, but to take a slice out of it. And of course, it did that. And then I started to use other things, random objects or whatever, to do this. And yes, it definitely works. So I thought, I'm going to try this with Gemini. So I went into Gemini and I tried with my voice. I asked it to draw the outline of a vinyl record, and it did this. It actually let it understood my voice. It didn't come back with, I can't do that with my voice. So Gemini actually did do this. And then I started to ask it all kinds of random things, like draw a thatch, a cottage with a thatched roof, and windows and a door. And it did this, but it also on the dot pad gives you the description, so you can read what Gemini is saying as well. Like, this cottage is set in a beautiful landscape with a thick thatched roof, windows and a door, and it actually describes it, which you can read on your device as well as the image. I don't know, it just blew my mind. I thought this is taking Braille and multi-line Braille to a different level. So I don't know if anyone has tried this on any multi-line display, but if you have, I would love to hear what you've asked one of these bots to do, and just to let you know that it definitely does work.
Because this is the thing with the dot pad, isn't it? That everything happens in real time. So you can just bring up
Yes.
pretty much, am I right in saying pretty much any image, and it will do its best to kind of draw it.
Yeah, it does. It's really good. So, if for example you're going through your icons on your iPhone, you're listening to VoiceOver, obviously, and it's telling you what the apps are as you go through them, say on your home screen. I mean, I've got a lot of my apps in folders. So it will actually give you not just the text, but you can switch it just so that you have the images and you're seeing all the icons coming up on your phone, which or on your dot pad from your phone, which is really interesting. It's just a different dynamic because we don't think about them as icons because we're listening to voiceover. Well, at least I don't think of them as icons. I know that, I've got a books folder, I've got a communications folder. It actually shows the icons of these images as well. On you can actually feel them. I'm just never. I haven't stopped being amazed by what multi-line Braille can actually do. And yes, I know the massive caveat is the cost, and I totally get that. But it really is beginning to take it now to a new level. And one of the QTVIs, Qualified Teachers of the Visually Impaired this week, suggested to me, what about if you could have the different densities on the dots so that if you are, looking at a map, for example, and you want to distinguish where the water is from the island or the country, that you could have different densities so you could feel the difference that the dots for water would be flatter or smooth, and the dots for the island or part of the map would be raised. And then, if you wanted, say, a mountain feature on that map, then that would be higher still. I think we will get there, and I'm sure it's already being worked on, but it just shows you how it's come forward since, just single line Braille.
Yeah, definitely. For the, like, I don't know, can't be more than 5 minutes that I've had hands-on with the dot pad. That blew me away, the whole thing of being able to scroll through your phone and feel the icons, which was pretty much all I did at that time because there was a queue of people behind me, also curious. This is the thing when you're always, when you're giving tech support, which is my main job when it comes to family, you will say to someone, I'll just click on the search box or, click on the settings button. And they kind of say, well, where's settings? When actually it's not, we think of it as a button that says settings, but it's actually like a little gear icon usually, or search, which is actually usually a little magnifying glass. We don't see them as that. So there is a big difference between what you get from speech and what you get visually. And I mean, I always just, I've said this so many times. I think I've said this every time multi-line Braille comes up. But I always just think of the days when I was at school, so many lessons, I would sit there and the teachers wouldn't have sent the resources to be brailled. So I'd just be sat there, either not being able to participate or waiting around while my support did their best to like
Exactly.
draw something on, I don't know how international this is, but do you remember the German film stuff that you could,
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
yeah, you know, but waiting around while they kind of drew something out on that, just a bit of a rough thing that they'd thrown together.
And it was rough as
It
well.
was, really was. But, you know, it was good. It was okay, but you didn't get the full effect. Whereas if you can just scroll to the diagram or to the image or whatever they're showing and it just comes up, okay, it still might not be perfect. It might not be an exact kind of copy of what sighted people are seeing, but I tell you, it'll be a hell of a lot better than just sat there for an hour while they tried to describe it.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it so interesting in education, and the way that it has moved so quickly in the last few years in particular. And yes, I know the argument is, well, you know, perhaps I've always been blind, so why would you worry at this stage in my life about what something looks like or a diagram? But I just think it opens a new world. It opens a new frontier, if you like, in the world of tactile. You know, your hands are feeling something that you couldn't imagine what it would look like. We think of it, as you say, in words, but it isn't like that. The world is so visual, and just to have a slice of that, a tiny slice, compared to what a sighted person can see, I still can't get over it. Every time I find something new, I just think, wow, you know, this is really extraordinary. And probably to somebody else, it might be, oh, big deal, so what? But to me, it is really important. And I'm just loving the whole journey of what Braille can actually achieve with all these, you know, dot patterns and multi-line displays.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this getting more common and then the cost becoming more reachable. That then I think is going to be huge. Yeah. It'll take a while, but I think when that does happen,
it will,
then
it's
going to, I mean, it's taking off as it is, but it's going to reach a whole new level in, I don't know, I'm not going to put a time on it, but a few years.
This is just the start.
Yeah. So a quick one from me this week. There's been a new NVDA add-on recently released, which looks quite cool, created by Andre Louis, who you might know. He's quite a well-known name in the visually impaired community, quite a well-known musician. And he's been creating a few different NVDA add-ons lately with the help of AI. I don't think he's making that a secret. And to be honest, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long as you know what you're doing, and he certainly does. So he's created one called Live Read, which looks pretty cool. The idea of it is, you know, sometimes when you're in an app or a website where you're waiting for something to happen and you've got like a progress bar, for example, but it's not actually, you know, it might kind of tick up from being like 50%, 51%, 52%. But the way it works, you've got to kind of take your focus away from it and then move it back to see the update, if you know what I mean, rather than it being a proper progress bar. So Live Read basically just means you can put your focus on it, enable this add-on, and then when anything changes on that bit of text or that progress bar or whatever it is, it will just read it out for you. So very simple, really, on the surface of it, but could make a big difference. I mean, if you've got, say, like something that's, because it doesn't have to be a progress bar, it could be something that, when you're downloading something, for example, it could say downloading, but then when it's done, it could say download complete. So all you'd need to do is just focus on the downloading bit, turn on live read, and then rather than having to arrow up and down and go back to it to check what's going on, as soon as it changes to download complete, it will, or download failed or whatever, it'll tell you. So it seems quite, I've not had a chance to try it yet. I've only heard about it this morning, actually, at the time of recording, but seems quite a nice one. Again, it's just it's a simple thing where if you say that to a lot of people, they'll go, what do you mean? Doesn't it do that already? But no, sometimes it doesn't. So I'm looking forward to having a play with that. The challenge at the minute, if you're not particularly techie, is that this is only on GitHub at the minute. I don't think it's in the add-on store. Whether it'll come to that, I don't know. As I said, it's just been released. But I think if you Google, just do a search around for like NVDA Live Read or something like that, you should be able to find it. Well, a lot to get into this week, of course, with the Apple announcements and new things from Android. It's all happening. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
With me today is Steve Nutt, who is obviously known as our resident Android correspondent. And there have been a few things that have cropped up in recent weeks, Steve, would you say, since we last spoke? First of all, the I.O. event on the 19th of May. What came out of that?
Well, most of what came out of that, Jackie, wasn't specifically Android, but more Google, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So one of the things is Gemini Omni. Now, if I understand Gemini Omni correctly, what it does is it uses various models of Gemini, because you know you can get Flash and Pro and various things like that. And it uses Gemini Omni. Omni uses various versions of the language to work out more complex issues or complex reasoning, they call it. So, you know, when you get into kind of programming and logic and things like that, you get into, you know, quite complex things. And Gemini Omni apparently is becoming more agentic, which, as far as I understand, is kind of being more like a person, if you like, where you can just simply converse with it and so on and things like that, if that makes sense.
It does.
Whether that will be better than selecting a particular model of Gemini is to be seen. You know, like if you select Pro, you can get pretty complex reasoning going on there as well. I like Gemini, I have to say, even though I'm an Android person by phone, but I do love Gemini on the PC as well. You know, I'm talking to it at the moment, interestingly enough, about what is the most advanced podcasting app, because the way I sort podcasts, which is neither here nor there, is really strange, because what I do is I have high priority podcasts, and then after the high priority podcasts, I want to hear the old ones, but rotation. So podcast A, then podcast B, and it seems that there are not many podcast apps in the world that can do that correctly. So I've been having a very interesting conversation with Gemini about the most advanced podcast app for Android. And it turns out to be one called Podcast Republic. So I'm just trying it at the moment. But that gives you an idea about complex reasoning, and you can have it figure out from the logic. One of the other things I love about Gemini is the fact that it can, as we've said in the last visit that I made to Tech Talk, that it can actually describe images and describe screens as well.
Yeah,
and you can actually have it click on an element of the screen now by using your voice. So it's getting better and better, you know. That's kind of Gemini Omni is kind of, I think, a subset of using all the different languages. So as you give it a prompt, it'll work out the best model to use rather than just use one model. I think that's how I understand it anyway.
Yeah, you know. It sounds about right, actually.
What would be more interesting is the universal shopping cart. Just before we started recording, I mentioned that, and you said you hadn't heard of that, didn't you, or something? So the universal shopping cart apparently is Google's way of doing what Alexa does for Amazon, if that makes sense, where, you know, you can add something to your Amazon shopping basket by voice. Well, with Google, you can now, or you will be able to have, and I think it starts in the USA, as it usually does, you will be able to have Google search for a product on different stores all over the world, as it were. And then if you find the product you want, you'll be able to have it add to your basket, your universal basket. And then, as I understand it, you'll be able to do a universal checkout, and Google will take care of paying the stores and things like that. That's how I believe it works. And if it does work like that, it could be quite good. You know, if you're looking for something in the supermarket in the way of food and a piece of electronics and all that, and if you could do all that in one shop and then just check out, that would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Would, because in a sense, that's what Inner Search sort of was yes. really like, in a way, on the web, in that it allowed you didn't have to have multiple accounts to different stores, online shops, if you like, and you could actually go into Inner Search. And I guess that if it's going to work this way, this is going to be a real boon for blind and visually impaired people who perhaps, you know, they're not quite as used to rummaging around looking for things on the web and having to go to multiple stores and online places that are really, you know, some of them are better than others for navigation. So if you could actually just talk to it via Google, and then it, you know, puts it in its basket, and you know, you have a universal checkout where you haven't got to have multiple accounts on different stores, that would be amazing.
It would, and I believe all the stores that you know want to would have to sign up to it,
sure,
and things like that. But that's how I understand the universal shopping cart to work, you know, and things like that. They talked a little bit about the new Pixel phones and various things, but nothing, you know, just enhancing the features we've already got, really. I don't see a lot new.
There'll be 11, probably Android, you know, Google Pixel 11 on their flagship phones, I would imagine.
And it'll be Android 17, of course, which I'm already testing. And it's looking pretty good. It's, you know, it's one of those things where TalkBack is really keeping up with it for a change, which, you know, because sometimes we get a beta and you get something that TalkBack doesn't speak, and you know, TalkBack needs updating to work with the beta, but at the moment it's really keeping up, which is nice. I find it a privilege to be on the TalkBack testers team, and to hopefully give valuable feedback as to, you know, to get TalkBack the best it can be for everybody. And it's now really coming good, you know, and I think it's up there with VoiceOver. I think there are equally nasty bugs as well in both of them. I've seen VoiceOver bugs in screen recognition and things like that, and TalkBack has equally nasty bugs, but they're equally good in their own way, and it's a good place to be for us, you know.
It is. Indeed. What about the glasses, Steve? Because I know that there has on, if anybody is on the email forums that Steve and I belong to, there has been a lot of chat about the Google XR glasses. And that really, for me, I'm looking forward to having Gemini on my face, as you put it one day. But it's true. And, I'm a big Gemini fan. Of all the AI bots that I've tried, I do get the most success with Gemini. I do like it that it's built into the Pixel phones. I think that's, for me, that's one of the biggest positives, if you like, of using a Pixel phone, is that it is built into it. That is your assistant, and it is getting better and better all the time. And I'm really looking forward to having it so that we can have it hands-free on our face, as you say, a pair of Google glasses. And the idea, I guess, of being able to have different apps like Google Lookout, like Be My Eyes, Seeing AI, all these kind of apps that we're kind of used to in the blindness community, but to have them on the glasses without restrictions. Whereas, it's great that the Meta Ray-Bans have been so successful unintentionally in our community, but there are drawbacks with them, obviously, and I think this is the exciting part about the Google glasses, from what I'm understanding of them anyway, is that you're going to have just so much more AI availability on these.
I have a good friend who's an Android developer and actually wrote an app for me called Notification Reader, and it's quite a complicated app. You can turn on and off each different app individually and have it either speak notifications or not, speak when it's on headset only, speak when it's on speakers only, speak when it's on charge only, all this kind of thing. It's a real complicated app, and it's really good. Anyway, the point of what I'm saying is that Malcolm said that feasibly, because XR, Google XR is open, any developer will be able to write an app for it. So just like you can, you know, for an Android phone. So because Notification Reader works on my phone, So, you know, he said feasibly we can improve the glasses, you know, by having these special apps written like he's done for me, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. And the way guided frameworks on the Pixel, where it can tell you when faces are in view and things like that. Can you imagine? You'll be able to take a picture on your glasses if guided frameworks as well. You know, if they bring that to the glasses, that will be really exciting, because at the moment, I'm not aware that you can tell Meta to tell you when somebody's face is in view, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, but Google will do that. It will say, turn, you know, move your head up, move your head down, or move the phone up, move the phone down, until your face is in view. And so you can take a selfie or somebody else's picture. And if that comes to glasses, that could be really good, couldn't it? You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot. I think there is a lot to look forward to. And to be fair, I believe Apple, they're working in partnership with, is it Samsung, to develop their glasses?
They are. Well, no, Google's working with Samsung, aren't they?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought Apple was doing something with them as well.
With Samsung as well.
I'm not sure, but I unless I've got that wrong, probably have.
I did chuckle the other day, Jackie, because in iOS 27 they're going to allow Chromecasting.
Ah, okay.
So Apple and Google are converging a bit, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
But as Angie reminded me, it was only Steve Jobs that argued with Google at the beginning, and that's why they didn't do stuff together, you know. And now Steve Jobs isn't part of the picture. I think Apple are trying to make friends with him a bit, you know.
And I think that Siri, I believe, is, you know, or Apple Intelligence is going to be working with Gemini as well. So, yes. I mean, it can only be a good thing, you know, if they collaborate in ways. Because at the end of the day, there is so much out there at the moment. There are so many of these AI models. And it can only be a good thing for a blind or visually impaired person to be able to take advantage of some of that stuff. Yes, I mean, you've got to be careful. We can't get carried away with it. And, you know, they do have hallucinations and, you know, they might come up with the odd thing. But I do think that there is a lot of benefit for us in a way that we've never had before. I think it's a very exciting time, to be honest, with AI, with screen readers, with phones and all that technology, really.
One of my most exciting things about Gemini and things like that as well is automation. What I mean by that is you can give it a Word document and say, make it accessible, and it will make the document all into headings for you and everything else, you know. You know, and it will do that in seconds, which might take you hours because it's a 100-page document or something, you know, and it will do it all in seconds. And whereas people say, oh, you know, AI is going to take away our jobs, I think it could enhance our jobs because, you know, I can see me using Gemini to make a document. I often get PDFs sent to me as an image.
Yeah.
And people want Braille transcriptions, you know. And so what do you do with that? You know, you scan it in. And, of course, with scanning it in, you might lose something, some of the detail or something like that. Now you can just give it to Gemini and go, make that document accessible for me. And off it goes and does it, you know.
It's really amazing how if you tell Gemini that please give me this from an accessibility perspective or as a blind person would use it, it actually does that as well. And I think that's, it's incredible. So if you've got, say, for argument's sake, a remote control or a piece of equipment you've just taken out of the box and you've got no idea where to turn it on or off, and you know you want a sort of a layout of the buttons, you can get Gemini not just to tell you that or to take a picture of it and tell you what that item is, but to actually read it in a way that a blind person can understand it from an accessibility perspective. It's mind-blowing, I think.
Well, that's a beautiful example you just gave me, because in that earlier example I gave you of me trying to find the most complicated podcast app to, you know, to sort my podcast in the way I want it.
Yeah.
When I was going through settings of Podcast Republic, Gemini was not only saying to me, you know, tap the settings button, do that. It was saying, tap the settings button, top right-hand corner of the screen, feel slightly down from the top and, you know, TalkBack will say more options or whatever, you know. And I thought, wow, that's really good, isn't it?
It is, there is just such a lot out there to be pleased about the way things are going. Is there anything else you would say in TalkBack 17 that we haven't seen before, Steve, that you can talk about?
Not really. I mean, there are improvements, and I can't talk about them at the moment. There will be improvements to Braille, as there always are, and I'm always glad about that. Because there's such a small percentage of blind people that actually use Braille. And so the fact that they keep on making Braille better pleases me. More HID devices supported and various things like that. Nothing concrete, you know, really. But, you know, better support for Braille devices with TalkBack and various things like that. And now when you read in Braille, one of the things I noticed in 17 is when you read in Braille, it doesn't speak every time the page changes, which is nice.
Okay.
So it used to, and it now doesn't. I mean, I still mute the speech just in case, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it now doesn't speak every time the screen changes if it knows you're reading Braille, which I think is quite clever. So, but not a lot new in that way was on IO. Mainly, it was all about the Google ecosystem rather than Android itself.
Yeah.
You know.
But it's always good to know. And that's why we like you to pop in now and again to talk about Android and Google, because we are balanced, and we want to hear about all these things. So on behalf of Tech Talk, Steve, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on once again, and we look forward to hearing from you pretty soon.
You're welcome. And can I just say that Tech Talk is one of my favorite podcasts in the way of tech. I know that all of the presenters use iPhones, so most of the apps are on iPhone, but it still gives us an overview of what apps are out there and things like that. And I enjoy hearing what Hubert's playing with and what Callum is playing with and various things like that, you know, because it gives me different things to look at. So well done on a good podcast.
Thank you.
So Apple, once again, it's that time of year. They had their Worldwide Developers Conference earlier this week. And this is the chance really we don't really see new products and new kind of fancy iPhones at this event. This is more telling us what's coming up in the software and some of the new things that developers can play with. But it is an interesting one. Hubert, what did you take away from this? In fact, before you go in there, guys, you won't believe this. There was a big focus on AI this year.
Oh, never.
That's surprising. Surprising. AI is not really a thing at the moment, so I don't know why they would talk about it. No. I thought it was an interesting one because I think they are showing how they're trying to unify all the systems by basically, instead of going through every single individual operating system and what's new with it, they actually went, no, all operating systems will have the same features, so let's just give you the three main headlining points. And they were, as you mentioned, AI, polishing stuff, and kind of parental controls and safety features. So all of the operating systems basically would have the same things now, which makes life a lot easier when it comes to presenting these things. I mean, when it comes to AI, I mean, it has to be looked at first, just to pick the headline. I don't know about you, but for me, new Siri AI, which is kind of Apple's version of a ChatGPT or Gemini, it can do a lot of things. You can ask, you can literally interact with things on the screen as they are showing on the screen, which I think is fantastic. It could do a lot of other things. And my thinking was, I mean, I could describe the whole thing here, but we only have certain amounts of time here. It's all sounding great on paper, but what will it sound like when it's out? That's my thing, because if it will be like it was shown at WWDC, I highly recommend, if you haven't done it yet, go to the Apple website or the Apple TV app and try and find it, because they talk really well through all the things it can do. It's quite marvellous. My only concern is, will it be like that when it comes out?
Well, this is my sort of query, really, is like, they talked about Apple Intelligence and last year, and how they were going to beef up Siri, and it didn't really happen, to be honest, not to any great degree. So I guess we have to wait and see. But they did talk this time about a new Siri app, so that's, we don't know. And if you're one of these people that want the beta versions, the very early betas, then fair enough. But I won't update my phone until I've heard, that iOS 27 is out and it's kind of reliable. There aren't any disastrous bugs, as does sometimes happen. So I'm never going to be one to try a beta version out in advance, but it is interesting to see what they're saying about Siri, and that it's going to have its own app and you're going to be able to do this and do that. So let's just hang fire and see.
I think this is the thing. It's easy to get quite excited about all this sort of stuff. And I am excited. There was some things with Siri that were really interesting. So like, for example, apparently it's going to have awareness of what is on your screen. So the example that they gave, or the example I saw on the Apple Viz post was if you've got a calendar event on your screen, you could then just say to Siri, move this to next week. And it would do that for you. It would know what's on your screen, what you're talking about, and it would be able to do it. So becoming a little bit more agentic, I guess, but very, very locked down. It's like very restrictive to, like, I don't think you could say to it, go to this website and book me a table for this many people at this time. I don't think it's going to have. This is the Apple way. They're trying to do everything locally. They're trying to really focus on privacy. So I don't think it's going to be as kind of unrestrictive as that. But while you're doing things, it will be able to work with you, is the impression that I'm getting from it, if that makes sense.
It can also describe what's on your screen as well. But for me,
Yeah.
I think if it's going to be, and there's going to be a caveat constantly repeated, if it's going to be like it was shown at WWDC, then I'd say in that case, I would say it's worth the wait because it's taken them forever to get to this point, let's be honest. However, they have perfected it where it is actually the functionality and what it can do on your Apple device is actually going to be more useful than the others, which can run on your device, I think. So, although they have taken an absolute age with this, I think they have actually put out something that could replace quite a lot of third-party solutions we currently use. It might not say it will definitely do it, but there is that possibility that certain things can now be done using just your device in easier ways.
So what else was there, Hubert? There was parental controls.
You've got a lot more parental controls. You can actually kind of control what your children have access to on their devices, where you can control which apps they can use. You can control how long they can use them for. There's a quite the controls are quite detailed, and also you can change them as your kids grow up, so it's not like they are locked down. So you can kind of introduce your children to various apps and contacts and things over time that you can control literally everything they can do, which it's if you want your child to be safe, which these days it's talked about quite a lot, so I think that's actually quite important if you're a parent and you would like to introduce your child to the use of technology, but you want them to do it safely. The new features will give you the ability to be sure that you're always able to see what they're doing and what they're being introduced to, because you are in control of that as a parent.
I do keep thinking about this, but then also keeping in mind, like, my son's just about to turn two, and we're not giving him devices and stuff yet. And I do keep kind of looking at these and going, yeah, that looks good. But then we're going to be in a whole different world by the time we could be in a whole different world next week, let's be honest. By the time he gets by the time he gets devices, I don't know what where we're going to be. But I do like it. I know people, it always raises a bit of a discussion about privacy, doesn't it, when these sorts of things come up. But I mean, one of the things that I like is the so you've been able to, when kids want to buy an app, you've been able to approve it or deny it as a parent for a while. So it would say, like, you know, James wants to buy this app for this price, do you allow it? There's going to be a thing called ask to browse, and this is the one that really stood out to me, where if they go to certain categories of websites, which you can set, then it will come up and say, James wants to visit this website, is that okay? And he won't be able to get on it until we approve that. And I quite like that. Again, I've seen a lot of discussion about, well, kids deserve the privacy, and they do. But first off, this is all up to the parents, how strict it's set. But also, I think it's, in my opinion, and I'm not trying to tell anyone else how to parent, we've got enough of that going on. But for me, I see that as a bit of an education thing. You know, if he ends up on a website or nearly going to a website that we feel he shouldn't be, either it's a case of, okay, you know, why were you trying to go there? Or if it was an accident, it can be a case of not telling him off as such, but just like, well, okay, do you want to, you know, do you want to chat about what you were doing and how you might have ended up there? You know, it kind of opens up the discussion, I think, if you do it right.
Yeah, I think that if you do it right is the correct caveat. There are great features, and I think if you want to educate your kids about the use of technology and what they can use over time, it's fantastic. As long as you do it right and don't overdo it, but at the same time, make sure you do it to the right level. It's getting that right balance, I think, between making sure children are safe, but making sure that, you know, it's balanced and it's done correctly, because all the things you can actually control, you can actually, you know, make sure everything is looked at, and the amount of detail you can set as a parent, you've got a lot of ability there, a lot of options to really provide a decent experience for your child and a safe one too.
Yeah, well, so many parents as well, I mean, just making them simpler, making them easier to access. I mean, I've got family members who, you know, let their kids use their phone or their iPad and stuff, and that's fine. Again, you know, it's a personal choice if that's what they want to do. But when it comes to setting the parental controls and screen time restrictions and certain, you know, restrictions on certain content, they'll just kind of go, I know you can, but I don't know how to do that. You know, and so many parents don't know that these exist or don't know how to set them up. And quite often, the kids know the tech better than the parents, generally speaking. You know, it's all right. Like, we do kind of look into this sort of thing, but your average parent, it needs to be as simple as possible to get to these and work out how they do and how they work and, you know, what they do and how to set them up.
And you will have a setup assistant that will take you through it as well, which I think is important, because, like, yeah, I say, for those parents who don't actually know how to do it much, a good setup assistant that kind of guides them through the setup, I think, is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. No, I quite like a lot of these parental controls and stuff that they're bringing out.
The other important thing to notice was the third segment, which I like because I don't think it happens every time they release a big update. There's a lot of polishing and improving performance, which I think sometimes is not happening enough. There's always little performance issues. And I think from what I've heard from early beta testers, and again, beta testing, it's a caveat, it can all change, but a lot of people saying that a lot of voiceover functions run just a little bit more smoothly, which sometimes can make a world of difference.
Yeah, I agree. It's good that they are, you know, concentrating on some of the, well, we like to put it crudely, bugs. But as you say, polishing some of the stuff that's kind of been outstanding. Some of it has sat around for a long time in previous iterations of iOS. So that is worth, you know, that is a biggie, really, for people, particularly with some of the aspects of Braille. That is a really big one there. So we look forward to that as well.
Yes, and I'm sure more information will come out as we kind of go through it. One important thing that always people want to know is devices and which devices will support the new software. And there's a little bit to notice here. So when it comes to the iPad OS and the iPhone iOS, they will run on the same devices that support iOS and iPad OS 26. When it comes to the very high quality AI features, you do need ideally an iPhone 15 Pro or above that sort of line. And so your iPhone 13 and 14 won't run every feature, especially when it comes to the kind of high-end AI stuff. If you want the on-device intense Apple Intelligence model, which has different voices and voice models, that will only run on the iPhone 17 Pro and the iPhone Air, I'm led to believe from what I've seen. So that's worth keeping in mind. But you will still be able to use the new Siri on older iPhones. So it's only the on-device model that you won't be able to access. When it comes to Apple Watches, if you've got an Apple Watch Series 8 or older, they will not support the new watchOS. Again, it's not necessarily saying you have to upgrade, but if you prefer to have the latest software, even if it's just for security, then it's something you may need to consider. But again, it's not a requirement because Apple do keep older devices still safe and secure as much as possible. And if you're an Apple TV user, which there's not many around us, I don't know that many, Apple TV HD models are being dropped as well. But to be honest, they have been supported for 11 years. So you will need to buy one of the Apple TV 4K models to run the latest tvOS. Again, how much new it has hasn't been really given too much airtime. I know there's a revamped podcasts app and a few other things. So there are a few little things, but that's something you also need to keep in mind in terms of software.
So a lot of exciting stuff, as usual with these events. Of course, as we've said, how well it will actually turn out. I mean, we have seen these promises before from Apple and it never quite came true, but we'll see. You know, I'm optimistic, I think. Just worth noting as well, we won't see these features yet. iOS 27 and, well, all the operating systems, 27 version of all of them will be coming out in September. So we will start seeing these features from then, really. They might not all come out at the same time, but that's when we'll start to see them come in. So what are your thoughts on any of this? Are you excited? Are you, are you skeptical? What are you thinking? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to welcome back Chanel Mattis from Right Here. She is the community manager. We have spoken about the Right Here app, and today we will be talking about a bit of a bigger picture in terms of wayfinding and advocacy. Chanel, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. So happy to be here.
In the world of blind advocacy, we talk a lot about digital accessibility, like websites and apps or physical access, ramps and tactile paving. What is currently the biggest, call it blind spot in the conversation regarding wayfinding?
I think the biggest blind spot, if you will, is that there's this misconception of what blindness looks like and how blind people function in the world. It seems like the greater community at large has this idea that we all have canes or guide dogs, or we just have a caretaker who just totes us around and takes care of us, and then we don't do things independently. And therefore, there's no reason to calculate that in their plans when it comes to design and setup for their locations. And they seem surprisingly shocked every single time one of us shows up and says, hey, I want to do this. And they're like, well, we can do this. You just have to make it possible. You have to create a space that allows us in. And I think that's the biggest glaring spot for me, is just this misunderstanding of what blindness is.
Some people argue that technology might make us too reliant on devices. How do you respond to the idea that indoor navigation should be a supplement to, rather than a replacement for, traditional orientation and mobility skills?
I think there's room for both. I think there would be an argument to say that an elevator is going to make everyone lazy. They could have just taken the stairs or a ramp. It's just a matter of perspective. It's a matter of opinion. It's a matter of being given an option, and it's your right to choose what is right for you, and knowing that it's okay to pass on something and say, that's not for me, but I'm glad it's there for someone else who needs it. And in this case, I would say, like, for example, with Right Here, we don't advocate at all for anyone to give up or supplement their orientation and mobility with Right Here. We actually want to work in tandem with your orientation and mobility skills, which is why we don't claim to be a navigation app. We're not telling you where to go. We're not telling you how to get there. We're not giving you any of that turn-by-turn information. We're just letting you know what's in the space around you so you can make an educated decision the same way you would if you were sighted. And you're going to do that using your orientation and mobility skills. You're still going to have to feel for steps. You're still going to have to understand, you know, the width and the depths of space you're in, and you know, listen for people passing you and check for things that people may have suddenly unexpectedly moved or left in your space, whatever the case may be. We are not by any means wanting to replace that, because that's essential for you as an independent person. And I think when you feel like you're making a choice, you're not being guided, you're not having your hand held and just saying, okay, follow the breadcrumbs, you're really living your life in the most free, independent way you can. You're using technology to make yourself aware and make your own independent decision.
We are currently seeing a shift towards audio augmented reality. How is high quality audio tech like 3D soundscapes changing the way blind and partially sighted people perceive a physical room compared to just 5 years ago?
I think we're starting to assign in our own minds, in the way that we create mental maps, we're starting to assign specific sounds almost the way that you would with a feeling into a space, which is fantastic. So for example, you know, if you hear running water, you assume, if you're in a house and you hear the running water, you assume you're in one of two places. You're either in a bathroom or you're in a kitchen. When you start to start associating these kinds of soundscaping with those kinds of spaces, and these apps are starting to understand how a person's mind intuitively understands sound, and they're implementing it into their technology, it becomes this really interesting mapping of combining what your mind and your ear automatically, naturally, instinctively creates a connection to with a guide, if you will, which is, I think, really interesting. I actually was recently using an app called BenVision, which uses music to, instead of words, to actually navigate you through a space. And I thought that was the most incredible experience, because the music didn't overwhelm me the way that words often can. So right, you walk through a space and words are talking and talking and talking and talking at you, and you can't even hear yourself think because you're so busy trying to collect the data that it's being given to you. But when you hear something like the music and it's just kind of flowing past your ear the way that you maybe would just listen to classical music, but at the same time all of those sounds are connected to something specific, you don't even realize how much of that information is being pulled in while you're still having a conversation with someone else, because there's now room for more words in a way that there isn't. So I think there's a lot of possibility in that future.
I really like the concept of navigating through sound rather than spoken words, because you're completely right. Sometimes when you're using these apps, you know, I've been trying a few apps that to give you various words when you're walking, and sometimes I like to say sometimes they get quite chatty. Going to universal design, do you think in terms of indoor navigation, will it eventually become a kind of a standard utility for everyone, like you would have with GPS in cars, for example? Or will it always be viewed strictly as an assistive tool?
I would like to believe there is a time in the future where something like right here will become universal design. And I think the reason why it has the possibility for it is, while it is obviously made for blind and visually impaired people to be able to access a space, right here is available in 35 different languages. So that means someone who is traveling to a foreign country for the first time can now access all of the same sign information in their own language. It also means that people who may be learning a different language and can speak some of it, but maybe can't read it, or maybe they're in a hospital where the words are complicated even for native language speakers, they can now hear it in their language. And I think that's going to make a huge game changer. I also think the fact that it's something that, because it's written text on a screen and can then be accessed by people who are hard of hearing or deaf, or hooked up to a braille display and read by someone who is both blind and deaf, I think that really creates a space where suddenly people realize, oh my gosh, signs can be read by absolutely everybody in any context. And I think when people start thinking about the global ramifications of that, of, you know, tourism and their economy and how many people actually from other countries and other places actually enter their space, it becomes more than just the blind people who show up at their door, but everybody who shows up at their door.
You've become a prominent voice in this space of indoor navigation. What was sort of the light bulb moment for you in your own career when you realized that indoor navigation was the specific problem you wanted to solve?
The reality was I lost my vision, and I live in New York City, and I had no resources. I didn't know anyone, and it took me a long time to figure it out and find it on my own. And I landed well. I'm very blessed in the sense that I found the right people who were able to assist me and train me and get me where I needed to go so that I could have the amazing career and full living experience that I have. But in the process of all of that, it was so hard. And even as I was learning things, everything just seemed like it was harder than it had to be. I didn't understand why there was no continuity amongst anything. There was no designed expectation of accessibility. I was like, well, we here in the US, we have the ADA. And I just had this idea in my head as a sighted person that the ADA just understood and automatically did it. It just took care of things. And then when I was on the other side and realizing the brutal truth of the fact that there's just so many gaping holes and there's so many things not being done properly and there's so many empty spaces that needs to be addressed. And I just thought, if I could go to the doctor by myself, if I could take my child to her school and I could take her to the park and I could do all the things without worrying about how accessible is this space? Can I get here safely? Will my daughter be okay, or will she become someone who's having to assist me? I want her to actually go out in the world when she's with me and still be a child. I don't want her to be my caretaker. And I don't mind her occasionally going, hey, mom, by the way, there's this random trash can in front of you. You might want to pass it. It's kind of gross. But I don't want her to spend every waking moment making that her conscious thought that she has to constantly check for things for me. I want to be able to do that for myself as much as humanly possible. And so for me, this mission really just became a natural, organic growth of my vision loss and my journey.
We are certainly hoping for a lot and a brighter future in terms of indoor navigation, because it's a topic we commonly discuss on RNIB Tech Talk, and it's great to hear about all the work that's being done, you know, by yourself and everyone else at Right Here, because it's always great to see progression in that area. As I would say, progress is so much more important than getting everything perfect. I always say perfection is the enemy of progress, and what we want to see is progress indeed. So thank you very much, Chanel Mattis, Community Manager at Right Here, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so, so grateful to have been invited.
And that is it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. If you've got any comments, if you've got any thoughts that you want to share with us, or any questions, get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Always welcome to send in a written message or a voice message as well. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
See you next week.